And welcome back in to Friday morning, GameDaySportsRadio.com. Boji Wood coming to you from the GameDaySportsRadio.com studios in the south suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. In the earlier segment, we were talking about Burt Reynolds, and appreciate Jeff Bowden being with us for a few minutes there, bringing back some memories that he had of Burt Reynolds down in Tallahassee, stories of him and his dad, Burt Reynolds and Jeff Bowden's dad, having good times together. Well, right now, let's bring in Mike Bernard from OTM Sports. It's time for this week's edition of Inside the Numbers, and again, brought to you by State Farm Insurance, Auto, Home, Property, and Life, a whole plethora of other products that State Farm has. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. And if you're in the Birmingham, Alabama market listening to us, go by and see Larry McIntosh in the Pelham office of State Farm Insurance at 205-663-3119. Mike, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well. It's a little early, but I'm ready to go.
Listen, well, that's right, because you're in the GameDaySportsRadio.com studios, obviously out in Las Vegas this week, but appreciate you getting up at the crack of dawn out there. But let me one thing that Jeff Bowden and I talked a little bit about off the air, and going to see if you know this one. Who was Burt Reynolds' roommate at Florida State when he played football 2 years there before injuries in a car accident actually caused him to hang up his career?
That would have been in the 60s.
Actually, that would have been in the 50s.
Okay. I don't have a good guess.
The Sunshine Scooter, Lee Corso.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I knew Corso played at Florida State, but I didn't know that he was there at the same time.
Yep. And they were roommates and actually stayed close throughout the years. Matter of fact, when Corso took the Hoosiers to the Holiday Bowl back in the 70s, Burt talked to the team in the locker room before the game. And, of course, if in this day and age, that would have been broadcast all over YouTube and everything else. But back then, nobody really even knew about it.
Right.
Well, listen, let's quickly recap last night's game. The Falcons and the Eagles kicked off the NFL regular season. Eagles, even though they played very ugly, came out with an 18-12 win. Nick Foles, 6-1 as a starter now, seems to get the job done. Jay Ajayi scored his second touchdown with just a little over 2 minutes to go to put the Eagles up 18-12. And, you know, what did you think about the game?
Well, I liked the low scoring because we had the under. But other than that, it was really a boring game. The Eagles didn't have a yard in the first quarter. And they resorted to another trick play. It worked. And, of course, at the end of the game, they made a good stop. I thought it was a good pass by Matty Ryan and a good catch by Julio, but the defender did a great job of pushing him out of bounds.
Well, let's look at it this way. The Falcons had 4 shots from the 10 and a shot from the 5, and they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, it was tough. And, you know, Atlanta, they don't close out games well. You know, let's not bring up the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but they didn't close that game out as they should have, and they didn't close this game out. And one thing I think it points out is when people look to Nick Foles' record, he's 6-1, but that he's just the quarterback. Okay, so much goes on, whether it's blame or you know, accolades to the quarterback. Look, Nick Foles didn't win that game. He didn't make terrible mistakes, but that was the worst. I think he was 17. What'd you say? He was 17 of 34, and he only had 117 yards.
Right, and an interception.
Yeah, and normally he protects the ball well, but hey, let's also give credit to the Atlanta defense, who's they filled some gaps. They're healthy in week one. I think Atlanta has a good chance to win the NFC South. I think they just have to learn to close out games when they're in position.
We're going to look at more NFL games for Sunday in the second segment of Inside the Numbers. But let's go ahead and get to tonight's college game, which is going to be TCU hosting SMU out in Fort Worth. This is an old Southwest Conference matchup. Now TCU, after years of going through conference purgatory, so to speak, has finally landed in another major conference, the Big 12. SMU, they're relegated to the American Athletic Conference. Last week, SMU was beaten 46-23 by North Texas. TCU, they overmatched Southern 55-7.
Yeah, Coach, I look at this game, and SMU replaced head coach Chad Morris with Sonny Dykes. Of course, Morris is now the head man at Arkansas. SMU returned 8 starters on defense from last year's team, and that team went to a bowl game, and most thought there wouldn't be a big drop-off, but North Texas really laid it to them in week one.
They did. They did a good job. North Texas is getting better year by year. They haven't made significant jumps, but they are getting better year by year. Those guys, going all the way back to Dan McCartney out there, he really kind of laid the foundation for that program, and they're getting better. They're beating some teams that people think they don't have any business beating. But TCU's Gary Patterson, he's now in his 18th year. He's been at his school longer than any head coach in the country. They have only 11 starters returned from 2017. He's breaking in a new quarterback. So, once again, this is going to be a Horned Frog team that relies on Gary Patterson's personality, and that's having a strong defense and not beat yourself on offense.
Oh, yeah. In my opinion, one of the most underrated coaches, and from the handicapping community, one of the most respected, because he does it by the book. And he doesn't make too many mistakes when it comes to strategy. This game, it's a typical sandwich game. SMU players, they're going to have 100% focus on TCU because they're the little brother. But some TCU players, and maybe some of even the staff, are going to be looking ahead to their next game. And that, of course, is against the Buckeyes.
Of course, they do have a big contest against Ohio State next week, and the Buckeyes come to Fort Worth, and without Urban Meyer, as we all know. But, yeah, they're going to be looking at that game. But this is a game between two teams that really cross paths with each other a good bit. I mean, they're 45 minutes away from each other, the campuses are. And so they're very familiar with each other. And for that reason, I think TCU may be a little bit more focused for this game than they would be if this game, this sandwich game, as you called it, was, say, a Southern or say, a BYU or a game like that. But one thing that really concerns me about SMU against this Texas Christian team is that SMU has allowed 31 points or more in 7 consecutive games. When you're playing a porous defense, that's what you need when you're breaking in a new quarterback.
Right.
You need to play against some bad defenses early, because he's not going to be playing against a bad defense next week when the Buckeyes come to town. TCU, they won last year's meeting versus the Mustangs by 20, 56-36. And from what you're telling me, Vegas expects much of the same this year.
Yeah, most casinos have the Horned Frogs favored by 21 or more. Some places I saw this morning had it up 22.5. The total is 58.5. SMU, they have covered 4 of their last 5 versus Big 12 teams. But the last 2 times that TCU went to SMU, Coach, the Frogs outscored SMU 89-3 in those 2 games. And, of course, they were on the road.
Moving to tomorrow's games, one of the early games we're going to take a look at, the Bulldogs of Mississippi State going out to Manhattan, Kansas to take on Bill Snyder and those Wildcats. Of course, this is going to be the SEC versus the Big 12. Joe Moorhead, his first road trip as a head coach with Mississippi State. And where he's going to is not an easy place to go to. And, of course, both these teams last week, they opened with 1AA opponents. Mississippi State, no trouble with Stephen F. Austin. They put up 63 points, and Nick Fitzgerald didn't even play. Kansas State, on the other hand, they struggle with South Dakota, 27-24. And when I mentioned this to someone at lunch earlier this week, they said, oh, yeah, but they're always beating all Iowa State. I said, no. You're mistaking North Dakota State with South Dakota. This is not the same thing. South Dakota is a very run-of-the-mill 1AA program, and that score being so close, it really surprised me.
It did me too, because, Coach, to be honest with you, I thought the same thing, because North Dakota State and South Dakota State both are powers in 1AA, but not South Dakota. So that's very concerning, and that's a big reason why the Bulldogs are favored by nearly 10 points on the road. I still look at this game as a potential trap game for Mississippi State. The Sooners went in there last season. They trailed 21-10 at the half before finally winning by 7. So K-State, when they're on the big stage, Snyder gets those teams ready.
He does. Now, he's been at Kansas State for a total of 27 years now. He turned what was a perennial doormat into a contender. I mean, there were years, 15 years ago or so, that they were contending not only for the conference championship, which they did win a time or two, but they were competing for national championships.
Oh, absolutely. And despite the fact that Manhattan, Kansas, is not exactly ideal when it comes to recruiting top-rated kids, Snyder managed to win two Big 12 titles. And remember, he retired after the 05 season, and K-State immediately went back into the college football cellar. He came back in 09, and then they won the conference, the Big 12 conference in 2012.
You and I have talked several times. I've told you how important being a fit at a place is for a coach. We see so many coaches that are successful and at one spot, and they'll leave for a bigger paycheck, a larger school, a program with more notoriety than where they are now, and they fall on their face. And the reason they do is not because they've forgotten how to coach. It's just they've gone to a bad fit. That's one thing that Bill Snyder has at Kansas State. He is a good fit there. He is a guy that gets up early in the morning and goes into the office. He carries that lunch bucket, so to speak, every day. And that's what it takes to win at a place like Kansas State. And again, Bill Snyder has the formula to win in Manhattan, Kansas. And it doesn't look like anybody else has right now. But as far as this game goes, I think when you look at Mississippi State, just from an athletic standpoint, they've got to be favored going into this game.
Right, and they are. And again, it's anywhere from – it opened, I believe, 8, and it's up around 10 in some casinos. The line's up there because nearly 70% of the wagers are backing the Bulldogs. Another factor is Mississippi State. They're really good right out of the gate. They've covered 70% of their games in the month of September. That's about 5-plus years of games. I'm going to pass on the side of the game because K-State and I know Mississippi State's much more talented, but Kansas State has a way of making these games really ugly on their home field.
All right, I want to remind everyone this segment brought to you by State Farm Insurance, Auto, Home, Property, and Life. All their other products that State Farm offers in the Birmingham, Alabama area. You can contact Larry McIntosh in Pelham at 205-663-3119. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. Mike, let's move on to the 3:30 marquee game in the Southeastern Conference. That's going to be the CBS selection. Georgia, South Carolina, just these two schools pretty close in proximity. A lot of similarities. Kirby Smart, Georgia graduate leading the Georgia Bulldogs. His old friend and fellow Bulldog alumnus, Will Muschamp, leading the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Of course, we all know Georgia defending SEC champs lost a heartbreaker to Alabama in the national championship game. So, South Carolina last year, they closed on a pretty good run. I think they were 6-2 over the last part of the year. And when you look at those two losses, they were to Georgia and Clemson. Of course, we know that both of those teams, they made the college football playoffs. And South Carolina, they got an easy win last week versus Coastal Carolina. And so now they're on a 7-2 run.
That's right. And, the Gamecocks are looking for respect, and they're not getting a lot of it out in Vegas. They don't get a lot of it in the national media. But they're going to have their chance Saturday afternoon. Of course, it says 3:30, but you and I both know a CBS game at 3:30 never kicks off before 3:45. So, but Georgia, they lost 6 defensive starters from that team last year, and This is going to be the first time, if I can tell, if they're reloading or rebuilding on that side of the ball.
It's going to be interesting to find out, because obviously this is going to be their first test after they beat Austin Peay last week 45-0. Offensively, Georgia has two good quarterbacks, Jake Fromm and then the freshman Justin Fields. Dogs lost Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, but they do have DeAndre Swift back and a lot of young talent around him. I like the Cook kid also. For South Carolina, Jake Bentley's kind of the old man now. He's going into his third year there at South Carolina, and he threw two picks in last year's Georgia game, so he wants to come into this game and play better and redeem himself from that performance.
Right, and you talking about Jake Bentley being in his third year, when Spurrier was there, it seems like no quarterback got to play more than a year in a row. When I look at the series, the home team owns the series. The home team's won 7 of the last 9 meetings. Georgia is 6-1 straight up and against the number their last 7 road games, so they do well when they travel away from Athens. When I look at the game, from a handicapping standpoint, it looks really inviting to take the points, especially if the spread is 10 or more. I think I might take a stab with Carolina if the line's 10 or higher.
Another 3:30 p.m. kickoff. This one on ESPN2 is Arkansas State at Alabama. Alabama, no problem with Louisville in the opener, and I don't know how much I would read into that, because I really don't know how good Louisville is this year. But one thing we know who the quarterback is at Alabama. Tua cemented his spot as the starter for the time being with that performance down in Orlando last week. Defensively, they had some missed assignments, but it really didn't matter because athletically they were able to overtake the Cardinals. Arkansas State, my old coach and comrade from Eastern New Mexico back in the early 90s, Blake Anderson, he's in his fifth year now at Arkansas State, and which that's a little bit of an anomaly, because for several years there you had Hugh Freeze, you had Haskin, you had Malzahn that came in, stayed 1 year at Arkansas State, and then moved on to a higher-profile job. Blake has been there, like I said, going into his fifth year now, has been successful, been to a bowl for all 4 years. And, again, I'm not saying that Arkansas State's going to come in and upset Alabama, not at all. But what I am saying is I think that this Arkansas State team overall will compete, and I believe that they will play a better game against Alabama than Louisville did.
Well, that's very interesting. I agree with you. Alabama beat Louisville 51-14, so they won by 37. Well, the point spread in this game is 36.5 points. And this Arkansas State team, they can score. They put pressure on opponents' defense. They averaged 36 points a game last year. And Alabama's a 36-point favorite. That might be a little too high. Remember, this is a letdown spot. It's not to say that Alabama's going to lose, but it is certainly a letdown situation, because the season opener in Orlando against an ACC team, and now they go play Arkansas State, and they may not be 100% prepared.
Let's look at the Colorado-Nebraska game. That is they were formerly in the Big 8, and then they were both formerly in the Big 12, and then they have both left. Colorado has gone out to the Pac-12. Nebraska has gone to the Big 10. Husker fans thought they were going to get to see Scott Frost debut last week versus Akron. Weather had other plans, and they had to cancel that game. Akron had to get back to Ohio on a charter. It logistically just could not be worked out. So this is going to be Scott Frost's debut this week. Colorado, they got off to a good start. They beat Colorado State 45-13 in Denver last week, but I don't know how much I would read into that, simply because from what I've seen of Colorado State this year, I'm not that impressed with the Rams. However, when you look at what Coach McCarty has done at Colorado, he's got that program back to respectability.
He does, and a couple of years ago they surprised everyone going to the Pac-12 championship game. You talked about Scott Frost, his debut. I think he's going to eventually be the man they need in Lincoln. I don't look for Nebraska to do much this year for two reasons. Their schedule is brutal. They have road games at Michigan, at Ohio State, at Wisconsin, at Northwestern, and at Iowa. And secondly, and I know this from talking to you for years, and we've discussed this very situation, the players at Nebraska don't fit what Frost wants to do offensively.
They do not, and it's easier, and again, it is hard to win anywhere at any level. It's hard to win. But if you're going to retool an offense, it's easier to do it at the lower level simply because you're able to plug athletes into spots where they may not normally play, and you can get around that until you can recruit your folks in there. But the problem is, especially in the Power 5 conferences, when you're going to face elite players on every defense, because I don't care if a team is 3-9 every single year, you look defensively, they're going to have some good players over there. And therefore, you know, they're going to match up against you. But the thing that Scott Frost, I think that he's got to do is he's got to get what he wants offensively, but he's going to have to spoon feed these new players, and he's going to have to give them plays that they can actually execute. He's going to have to cut down on some of his checks, his automatics at the line. He's going to have to do that. But I think that Scott Frost, I think he's smart enough coach that he sees that, and I believe that Nebraska is going to be pretty good this year.
I think they're going to be good. I don't think they can overcome that schedule and get to bowl eligibility. If they do, great, but it's just a daunting task. And I think one other thing that's going to be pointed out is how good that quarterback at Central Florida, Milton, really was last year. Because, you know, Scott Frost is going to start a different quarterback. That Milton kid's pretty good. When I look at trends in this game, Coach, going back to Mike Riley, of course, Nebraska, last 12 home games, they covered the number one time out of 12 home games. The underdog has covered 11 of the last 15 meetings. And again, these teams don't play every year anymore, but the underdog usually fares well. Trends and intangibles point to the Buffaloes plus the points.
I think it's going to be a fun game to watch. And just for the fact, I want to see the atmosphere and the enthusiasm that is on that Nebraska sideline with Scott Frost making his debut. Now, as far as games go, this is the game that I want to see. Clemson at Texas A&M. I think that this game has all the makings for something special for one of these two teams. You have the defending ACC champ. They're going into College Station. It's Jimbo Fisher's first big game as the Aggies head coach. The Tigers, of course, they return 15 starters, including 8 from defense, and I think you and I both agree that they've got the best defensive coordinator in the business. But I think the atmosphere in College Station on Saturday night, and this is a 7 p.m. ESPN kick, I think it's going to be electric, and I think one of these two teams is going to make a statement.
Right, and you mentioned the DC from Clemson, Venables. It's no coincidence that when Clemson started their reign to show where they just reload, it was when he got there, and they do reload. Most teams lose top players and rebuild. Only a handful of teams reload every year, and I think Clemson is certainly one of those. The quarterback situation, it's a great situation to have two quality quarterbacks unless it divides the locker room at some point. Jimbo Fisher, first year, and look, he's got a tough schedule. He's got Clemson this week. He's got road games at Alabama, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, and at Auburn. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that Fisher can do this year, I know he wants to win and he's a winner, but he seems to be hyper-focused on changing that culture.
He does seem hyper-focused on changing everything about that culture in College Station. You mentioned the Clemson quarterbacks. Kelly Bryant, of course, led him to the playoffs last year. Trevor Lawrence, the freshman from Georgia that came in, from Cartersville, Georgia, that came in January. So he's been there, been through spring training and everything. He actually got more reps in their win last week than Kelly Bryant did. But that's okay. I think that down the road, they're probably going to need that kid in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But it's going back to Jimbo Fisher and College Station. They've had this game circle since he got there. They're putting a lot of eggs in this basket. And that can either be a very good thing or it can be a very bad thing.
Yeah, and when I look at this matchup, obviously Clemson's favored to win. They opened 11. They went up to 13. Right now I see them anywhere from 12 to 13. Clemson, they're not scared of the SEC or any other conference for that matter, nor should they be. They've covered four of their last five versus SEC teams. Texas A&M, on the other hand, they've only covered one of their last six when they play ACC teams. And, Coach, one stat I pulled up, A&M's been a double-digit home dog only three times since 2008, and they did cover all three of those.
Let's move down to Gainesville, Florida, 7:30 p.m. kickoff on the SEC Network. It's the Wildcats of Kentucky and the Gators. Dan Mullen has his dream job. As he said, he's back in Gainesville. He thinks that's the best place in the world. Of course, he said the same thing when he was in Starkville. But the Gators are hosting a Kentucky team that they have beaten for 31 straight years. Now, Kentucky's been right on the edge of beating the Gators several times over the last few years, but they just haven't been able to pull it off. Hey, this year, it might be the year.
It could. You talked about Dan Mullen talking about the greatest place. Hey, when you're talking 7-8 figures, it can be the most desolate place on the earth, and you're like, hey, this is the greatest place I've ever been to.
That's right.
Yeah, but the both of these teams, they struggled against the point spread in 2017. But in this series, Florida owns Kentucky. They've covered 9 of the last 11 meetings. They've beaten them 31 straight times. Last season, this is an interesting stat, Coach. Last season, the Gators threw a total of 9 touchdown passes for the whole year. Week one, quarterback Franks tossed 5 touchdowns, and he didn't even play the full game.
Well, Felipe Franks, of course, everybody remembers the big Hail Mary touchdown pass that he had last year against Tennessee that really started Butch Jones' slide out of Knoxville. But again, you should throw, if you're an SEC team, you should throw 5 touchdown passes against the Charleston Southerns of the world. No disrespect to those guys, but you just should have better athletes, and you should be able to play better than them. You know, Mark Stoops was sick about losing to Florida a couple of years ago, and this is one game that he really points toward as far as it will be a benchmark to get his program over the hump. He does not have the athletes that Florida has. That's just a fact of life. Kentucky is not going to have, athlete for athlete, better players than Florida. So they've got to play flawless, and they've got to take advantage of any mistakes that Florida may make.
Obviously, we both know if they're -4 in turnovers in Gainesville, they're going to get blown off the field. But I think you can turn that into a positive. Say, hey, we beat a pretty decent Central Michigan team by 15 points, and we were -4 in turnovers. They have to protect the ball better. I think the biggest thing is, do the Wildcat players believe they can play? And much of that's going to depend on if they stay in the game early, because Florida's a 13-14-point favorite. And if they get down early, they're going to be, the players may be like, well, here we go again. When I look at trends in the game, I already mentioned Gators have covered 9 of the last 11 home meetings. Gators have success against Kentucky. But in the last 9 SEC games, Florida's covered just 2. Odds makers aren't convinced Florida's fixed all their issues on offense. So that's why they're favored by less than 2 touchdowns in some casinos.
Okay, Mike, a game in Pennsylvania that is a civil war up there, Penn State and Pitt, but it doesn't get a lot of play nationally. And I think one reason is because for 14 years, they didn't even play each other. And both of these teams had games scheduled last week that were, hey, let's just get tuned up. Pitt, you know, they go out, they went through the motions, they beat Albany 33-7. The bad news for Penn State is they ended up scheduling Appy State. Well, they wasn't just going to go through the motions and beat Appy State.
Mm-mm.
They needed overtime to get past the Mountaineers. And, of course, no surprise there, Appy State plays any Power 5 school very tough. And I think it's 25 years ago or so that was the anniversary of Appy State going in as a 1AA school, which they are in the Sun Belt Conference now. Appy State is. They are an FBS school now. But at that time, they were a 1AA school and went into the Big House and upset Michigan. Again, this is a series that has kind of been on again and off again. It was resumed in 2016. Pitt won in 16. State won last year in Happy Valley.
Yeah, much has changed in the last 20 years. Both of these teams were independents. Penn State, of course, joined the Big Ten. Pitt joined the Big East. The Big East went away. Now Pitt's in the ACC. And Pitt hasn't had the best seasons lately. But, Coach, they have had a huge impact on the college football playoffs. Last season, they beat Miami, took them out of contention. In 2016, they beat eventual champion Clemson.
Pat Marduzzi, the head coach at Pitt, came over from Michigan State. He was the defensive coordinator there for many, many years. And he's brought, a tough work ethic back to Pitt. And again, if you've ever been to Pittsburgh, you know Pittsburgh is a gritty-type town. And he plays into that very well. Pittsburgh is always going to win a game that they shouldn't win. And it may be this one.
It could be. They're only an 8.5-point underdog, and they're playing at home. That concerns me, their defense seems to be on and off again. Some games they'll give up 40. The next game they'll look solid and give up less than 20. But Penn State doesn't have Barkley, of course, and they've lost a couple of weapons. I look for this game to be entertaining. I look forward to it. As far as from a handicapping standpoint, again, Penn State's 8.5, 9-point favorite on the road. Penn State, they've been a covering machine the last 2.5 years. They've covered 72% of all of their games and 7 of their last 9 on the road. Pitt, they've struggled just covering 8 of their last 28 home games, and they're only 1-1-1 against Big Ten teams.
Out on the West Coast, we have a matchup of top 20 teams. In the Pac-12, USC and Stanford, they go at it in Palo Alto. This is an 8:30 p.m. kickoff on Fox. That's 8:30 Eastern. Trojans and the Cardinals, they both won their season openers, and now they're going to jump right into conference play and in a very important game for both these teams.
Yeah, SC struggled against UNLV. Stanford could not run the ball on San Diego State. Bryce Love got stopped, but they still won, and they covered the game as well. They won 31-10.
Even though it's a conference game, I think after Auburn beating Washington last week here in Atlanta, I think a lot of eyes are going to be on this game to see, okay, just how good is the Pac-12 this year?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. And, you know, of course, Stanford's in the north with Washington. Washington, I mean, look, we saw them on the field. They didn't play great, but you saw their potential. They're up there with the elite teams. They're built like an SEC team, actually. Stanford used to be built like an SEC team, but their defensive front's gotten a little weak here lately. But it's going to be important for Washington, for Stanford to do well, so they, if Washington has a chance to get in the playoff, if they go on to finish the season strong. USC, they're in the South, and they have a lot of injuries, a lot of new players at key positions. And it's going to be interesting to see if this game. And look, Stanford is a 5-point favorite. Normally, I like the underdog when it's 5. But that tells me that since Stanford's a 5-point favorite, that they should be favored by more.
I think that Stanford is going to find their running game this week. I think Bryce Love, I think David Shaw, I think he's going to challenge that offensive line. And I think Bryce Love is going to have a big game against the Southern Cal Trojans. However, you know, I think the Trojans could be a sleeper team out west.
They could be. A couple of points, though. Look, let's not – Stanford beat San Diego State 31-10. And remember, they played in the Mountain West Championship game, and somehow, some way, they beat Boise And then they made them go play the championship game in Boise. And so they were a good team last year. So that's a good quality win. As far as the point spread's concerned, Southern Cal has covered just 3 of their last 16 games. That's a woeful 18%. Now, much of that has to do with the public loves USC. They know they're talented, and they have inflated numbers. In this game, Stanford's favored by 5 or 5.5, and that point spread usually favors the underdog. But with USC injuries, troubles covering the games, I'm going to hold off on this one.
Last game we're going to look at for a college football weekend is Alabama State at Auburn. And Auburn, again, this should be a walk in the park for the Tigers. The Hornets just driving up I-85 from Montgomery to collect a paycheck. Auburn last week, they put a damper on Washington's chances for the playoffs and really put the spotlight on the Pac-12 conference. I think that's another reason why it's so important to watch that USC-Stanford game and see how it plays out. I think that Auburn's offense, again, they had some bright spots, but they just they were not effective and not consistent. But what was consistent was that defensive front.
It was. And, again, the Auburn offense was not going against chopped liver either. They were going against a solid Washington team. They didn't look their best. They didn't score in the red zone. But the Auburn defense didn't allow Washington to score in the red zone, and they created huge turnovers. The defensive line of Auburn, look, that's the reason we at OTM Sports didn't listen to the point spread, which said Washington would likely win or cover. But the defensive line was so strong last year and again in the first game out. Those stops in the red zone, those were the difference. And, look, let's tell it like it is. They have a breather Saturday night. Alabama State last season amassed 330 yards or more only twice in a game in 2017. They don't have a chance here. Like you say, they're just picking up a paycheck.
All right, going to kick things off tonight, college football weekend, with TCU and SMU, and then a full slate of games on tap for tomorrow. Again, I want to thank Mike Bernard sitting in our GameDaySportsRadio.com studios out in Las Vegas. And thanks State Farm Insurance, auto, home, property, life, all their products. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. If you're in the Birmingham, Alabama market, see Larry McIntosh in Pelham at 205-663-3119. Mike, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at some NFL games, and we'll do that right after this. Don't want no cloud.